Hello, and welcome to Rethinking Legal Law, a podcast by Speed Legal. I'm Ishwari Saxena, and here we talk to legal experts, industry leaders, and innovators about the many ways that legal tech is transforming the way we practice law. Have a wonderful guest with us, Shreya Vajpayee. I was very excited to talk with you. She's a very entrepreneurial young woman from India, very enthusiastic about legal tech. She is the prime mover at Prologue. They're doing really cool work. You should go check out some of their publishings. And also, she works at Kaitan & Company as an assistant manager, which is one of the oldest and most renowned law firms in all of India. Great to have you here, Shreya.
Thanks, Ashwara. It's great to be here.
And I was in particular really excited to have you here because, you know, lately we've been sort of talking about, you know, we've talked about what legal tech means for businesses, what legal tech means for like the legal industry in general, but we haven't talked as much in depth about what it really means for like students or like, you know, young people. You're one of the trailblazers in sort of like, you know, like the younger generation of lawyers adopting legal tech and sort of running with it. So really looking forward to getting some of your insights about, you know, what the new age careers in law really mean with, you know, the digital transformations and the integration of legal tech.
Okay, so I'll just take a few steps back, right? Of course, we know that technology is changing how the entire legal industry really runs, but that's not the only thing that's really changing it. And I'll go, if I don't know if anybody here has had the chance, but this is like a mandatory minimum reading for anybody who's starting out or has been in this space or is wanting to understand just what is happening to the industry. You have to check out Richard Susskind's Tomorrow's Lawyers, and it does these brilliant predictions that were done some 10 years back, and most of them have already played out. But effectively, he calls out three drivers of change that are really changing the legal industry. So one is liberalization, which is just the legal industry opening up to non-lawyers and other kinds of players being able to deliver legal services and give legal advice. The second is a pressure, and it's like something that comes to us from the clients, right? Now, each client wants more value for lesser money. And Susskind calls this the more for less challenge. And we'll probably talk about it more if it becomes relevant. And the third, obviously, is technology and how it's generally transformed everything as we know it. And of course, we're not untouched by it. So there are these three changes that have really sort of transformed how legal industry has changed. And of course, if you talk about the players within the market, right, and how they have changed. So you have the law firms, we have big law and small law and like mid-sized law. Then you obviously have your independent lawyers and how they have changed and how they function. Then you have these new entrants that have really sort of emerged fairly recently, as compared to the entire existence of legal industry, right? So you have the alternative legal service providers, which are like your LPOs, right? Where a lot of bulk work happens, and how they end up doing it is because they really use tech and they really use processes and they leverage those two things to do large volumes of work in very, very low costs. Like Elevate, or you would have your, for Indian context, you will have something like Mind Merchant, et cetera. And the other entrant, like you said, like are legal tech products, which have really changed what kind of services can be given, how quickly they can be given, what can be the turnaround times, what the ends of like end product looks like, and it's completely changed that entire market. One of the things here, and something very interesting that India really hasn't really been looking at, but I know the United States now has these regulatory sandboxes, right? Where these legal products can also give legal advice, which is insane. And I mean, I only know as much as I've read about it in the newspaper, but if you know something about it, Ashwara, I'd love to like hear that from you.
Yeah, no, I mean, those things are, I think they're really sort of like revolutionizing, you know, what it really means to practice as a lawyer and to, be like a legal tech entrepreneur. Utah has one, like the legal tech sandbox, where they work very, very closely with like the regulatory authorities at the Bar Association and make legal tech and just in general legal resources available to the general public, which, is a problem because we at Speed Legal, we recently did some surveys with just students, mostly in Berkeley and the Bay Area, also some other places, like we had some students at NYU, et cetera. And we asked them a question about like, what do you think is, like one of the biggest barriers to, getting legal resources just in the context of a student. Most of them said like, I'm not even aware of my rights. So most times I don't even know where to go or if to go to someone, and then legal is way too expensive for me to like try to figure out my rights. So it doesn't feel worthwhile. And I think what they're doing in Utah is really sort of opening up this field. You can just go, like, you can check out different tools. Like, there's drafting tools. There are all sorts of, I think there are also some chatbots that they have in the sandbox, and it does have that sort of approval from the regulatory perspective. So people feel more comfortable sort of playing around with those tools as well.
Yeah, so I mean that's great to hear. And I think what all of those things really do for the new people that are coming in, right, is that all advice that have been given so far is probably not going to apply when they start working, because the way you work is not pen and paper based anymore. You really, really need to have a very different mindset, not only skill set, when you sort of come in and practice law, right? And a couple of things that are becoming more and more relevant, of course. You need to have technological literacy, but that's not the only thing. You need to have something they call technological affinity also, which is you just like tinkering around, playing with tech, like how you try and use your mobile phone better. Similarly, how you try and do everyday work better, right? And it can range from something as small as you just Googling, how do I templatize this, or how do I do this faster, or productivity hacks, or whatever, right? To trying to just learn something altogether new and then using it better to sort of work in a more efficient way. And what that allows you is not only more sleep, which I think for lawyers tends to be very important,
I'm all for
but it also allows you to sort of work on more complex legal issues with more time, so you can do it better and you can really like sort of deep dive into whatever the legal issue is that you're trying to solve. So that is one. Second thing that's definitely happened with all of this tech coming is that data is now in abundance, right? You're just creating more data as you go, and each data point, if you can really sort of structure it and then on top of it analyze it in one way or the other, you can just make so much, like the decision making can be improved multifold. And you have a few products on the market. Like I was recently looking at something called Predictor, which like looks at all judges' data and pass not only their decisions but even their personal data that's obviously public in nature, and how that can influence how they make decisions. And this is of course like a US product. We don't have anything similar in India, but data can really be leveraged in that way. And it's very, very important for you to know how to, A, look at whatever information you have as structured data. And then, of course, the second level is learn how to analyze it, which is like a separate story. Sorry, please go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just chiming in and saying, yeah, it's like lawyers oftentimes we're like not really I mean we're not really the most comfortable people with like numbers. I'm just talking about like in general. I'm sure there are lawyers that are like mathematicians and total geniuses at
No,
it.
like half the lawyers in India are just like, we couldn't do math, so
So we
we
read
did
the law.
law.
Same here. Same here. That's the joke. And yeah, I mean, when we talk about like data and stuff, it honestly, like to a lot of lawyers, like it could feel like intimidating, but that is the need of the business right now. Like clients need those sort of innovative legal solutions that are like data driven. They want that sort of data out of their contracts just to have, more sort of an edge in how they're negotiating. And I think everything you're saying is so relevant. And that's why I think like law firms are also hiring team members like that are like data scientists. They're not just hiring lawyers. You know, the teams are becoming more sort of interdisciplinary. So it's really exciting. And Shreya, I want to get some of your insights on like, you know, in this whole exciting, you know, phase that the legal industry is going through right now, you know, a more sort of a multidisciplinary approach to practicing the law, working with members of other disciplines and with other, you know, sort of training and backgrounds. And learning to maybe leverage data, having tech affinity, which is a term that I absolutely love. I'm going to use that a lot now. So you should probably trademark that if you've come up with it. And what sort of new career opportunities has this opened up for someone that's just starting out in their career in law or even mid-career?
So, like I said, right, a lot of new players have come in. So you have all these legal tech companies and they're effectively startups, right? So every role that exists in a startup will exist in this legal tech sort of infrastructure. And you can be like a product designer, you can be a content person there, you can be the CEO's office doing everything end to end, you can be a project manager there, you can even try your hands, you know, sort of. You may not know how to code, but you can work very closely with engineers to really like learn base level how they are structuring the various functionalities of whatever product is being built out. You can be on the marketing side. So, I mean, to that extent, you can have a law degree and enter a legal tech startup and just be whoever you want to be. And they're very, very fast-paced organizations. So the learning there and the growth there is going to be insane. So that I think is brilliant, right? Like you can love to write or love or just love to make memes and in fact, you know, right? Like Alex Su and Mark
Oh
Margolis, like both of them became
yeah.
very big because they were making memes and now they're
Yeah.
heading communities, they're chief community officers, which is also something that's becoming very, very relevant to startups.
Yeah.
So those kinds of some really interesting roles that are sort of coming up in the startup space. But apart from that, on the other side of things, right, which are like slightly more legal in nature, you have people who are now doing are becoming solution architects of sorts. So they
Yeah.
will build solutions within like a law firm structure or even an in-house structure. Or you will have these self-proclaimed legal engineers, right? Which are engineers that are working on hyper-specific legal and tech products like e-discovery. Or you
Yeah.
will have, you know, contract automation specialists. And all
Yeah.
they do is that they will just help you like deploy that one product end to end.
Yeah.
And I understand that the US market for e-discovery is very big. So Indian market is not big at all, right? But you do have all of these hyper specialists in that sense, and they're both like you have like some engineers, some lawyers, some people who segued midway. So that those are another kind of roles that are sort of there. Then you of course have because of all of this tech and how communication has changed, you have a lot of these project manager roles, right?
Yeah.
That are people that are helping lawyers and both client use the systems that exist better to like
Yeah.
deliver better quality and just improve that entire experience for all parties.
Yeah. Yeah.
And apart from that, then there are of course roles like the kind that I'm doing, which is innovation roles, which are just people tinkering, seeing what new might work, what might
Yeah.
not work, just sort of like you know, rethinking, trying to rethink how things have been done so far.
Yep,
So
yeah.
there is yeah, all of this. And of course, there are like a gazillion more roles that are coming up, right? You have these
Yeah.
analysts who will just look at data and try to make better decisions. And this can be any kind of analyst, right? It can be to improve
Yeah.
the product, improve the service, improve the client experience.
Yeah.
And very honestly, I feel like we can do an entire session on just roles.
Yeah.
But I think this is like a good place to start.
No, definitely. And thank you for laying out the entire landscape. It just sounds so exciting, you know, because when I was in law school, which now feels like a century ago because the Gen Z is already here. but But yeah, when I was in law school, I would look at traditional lawyers and I would feel inspired. I was like, that's really cool. Like, I want to wear those suits. I want to go work at a law firm. But there was not that much else. Like, you went to work at a law firm and then you went sort of in-house. And that was, like the journey of a lawyer. It's sort of what you did. And at least, like, that's what I was exposed to. I'm sure there were some of these opportunities then available too. And now I'm seeing, as you're saying, like content creators, like legal content creators, project managers, the ones that I love the most, like solutions architect. I just love that title. In fact, next week we're going to have someone from Elevate, Andy
Oh,
Nin,
wow.
who's worked as a solutions architect at Elevate and is doing wonderful things now at continuing on at Elevate as well. And it's just so exciting to think about, how lawyers can really channel that sort of like creativity and that innovation that we all have, I think, as human beings. Every single one of us has them, but innovation was something that was quite commonly associated with someone working in the STEM fields. But it is just wonderful to know that you could do the same in law as well. We've had some very entrepreneurial, wonderful people on the podcast before. We had Marco Mendola, who is just doing amazing legal design work, completely changing the way people approach legal documents, making them accessible. We had Stefania and Paula Doyle, both brilliant ladies, breaking the legal design world with their trailblazing work. We also had Matt Kapowski, who also creates really wonderful content, like very similar to Alex Sue. And we haven't yet had Alex Sue, but like would love to have him on the podcast as well. But
I'm rooting for
I
that episode.
I adore all the content he puts out, and it's so relevant because you start conversations about things and no one talks about, like you just mentioned, like lawyers need more sleep. And I just think that law does not have to be this serious. Like, we need to start looking at law as like an industry. It's a business, and really need to start working with the clients to make everyone's experience so much better. Like, lawyers can get more sleep, clients can get, can spend a little less money and, get the services that they want. And it all ends up being a win-win. Just going off of that point, Shreya, how important do you think is tech integration to the continued profitability of law firms?
So I think it's impossible to live without, really leveraging tech in the way that the industry is really changing. Because it's one of those things, right? If you like continue to use a pager when everybody else is on a smartphone, you're going to have a tough time really trying to get the same kind of things that they can get done. And let's say, like, if you had a smartphone and I had a pager and we're like doing a train journey, right? From whatever, from home to work or vice versa. What you can achieve in that 45-minute journey is something I would never achieve, even if I had to, like, a 4-hour journey, right? So just like something that's as simple as that can really make a lot of difference with what you can really achieve. And clients are very smart these days, right? Like, clients are in fact more sophisticated than most of the legal service providers in the legal industry at the moment. And if you do not have it, then they will demand it of you because they are using it and they are already leveraging tech probably in a much better way than you are. And if you don't at least stay at pace, ideally you should be like ahead of them. But if you don't at least stay at pace, then you're going to have a very tough time trying to justify why they should be paying you whatever you're asking for.
Exactly. And have you seen this as a trend more for like tech, like SaaS clients, or is this in general, like even like your regular, just like the big conglomerate clients? Because like Ketan is like a very big firm, so you're dealing with like enterprise level clients as well. Are they demanding, more sort of tech integration as well?
So I will not comment on specific clients that are specific to Ketan, but generally, and in fact, I think even Wolters Kluwer did like a very recent report to just sort of understand client demands, right? And now almost 72% to 80% of all of your companies that are looking to engage an external counsel will ask, how are you using technology for efficiency? And how much are you really leveraging your in-house tech to improve product? And that's like a generic question that will come to you when they are trying to engage you. So it's quite fairly across the board. I think the differential comes within how efficient are they themselves? So, like a SaaS company or like a technological MNC, their legal departments have already been using tech for a very, very long time. And because they work so closely with business functions, which tend to be technologically inclined as well, they are usually very, very literate and have been and are very, very have very advanced skills and have been leveraging tech very, very deeply as compared to, let's say a conglomerate or another company that's probably doing an FMCG business. But that doesn't take away from the fact that they also have proper technical teams, right? And somewhere or the
Yes.
other, they are leveraging technology to improve their business. So there's really no running away. And even apart from all of that, I think all corporate legal departments have massive cost pressures as they
Yeah.
go, right? Like their budgets are reduced, and year on year, they have to almost show, and that's been my experience speaking to a lot of in-house lawyers, that every year their target is to reduce legal expenditure,
Yeah.
right? So they basically year on year need to show a reduction, which is
Yeah.
impossible to do, especially if your company is growing,
Yeah.
right? Like, how do you
Yeah.
balance it out?
Yeah.
And the only
Yeah.
way you balance it out is that you will pass on that cost pressure to your external counsel. So even
Yeah.
otherwise, law firms are under massive, massive cost pressures from the clients. So the only way to sort of be more efficient and do like better work faster is by using technology. So there's really like no running away at the end of this.
Yeah. Wow. And that's a very important point, like the question of cost pressure, because I think in the legal tech industry, everyone like hates the word the billable hour. Like you say it and people are just like they're sighing already and they're like, oh, we hate it. Like it needs to change. But what you bring up with regards to, law firms also feeling the cost pressure because in-house departments are just, they don't have enough resources and they're realizing that they don't need to allocate as many resources towards towards legal. So that's completely that's understandable, and that's like really speaks to why legal tech is so relevant and why like so many law firms. I mean, Ketan has its own innovation department you're part of, DLA Piper, White & Case. A lot of these law firms are just like going out there and looking, actually putting like legal tech companies on their radars and just seeing what's really out there and what they could leverage. And I think that was a very different story, say back in like I think even 2014, 2015, like it was a very different story. Like no one was really even talking or about these things or taking them very seriously. And so Shreya, what are some of the most relevant legal tech tools that are being used in India right now? I've heard of LegalMind and a few others, like some like CLM, a little bit of like case law search type of tools, but I'd love to get your insights. Like what are some of the things that people in like law firms are using?
So I think I'll have to give a little bit of context because Indian market is not comparable to US or just like EU jurisdictions, right? Infrastructurally, except for like the tier one cities, we don't really have a lot of infrastructure to have even access to internet, and that sort of is the backbone of most of these products and how really change comes in. So that is there, just to give you context. A lot of our infrastructure also is heavily has always heavily been reliant on paper and a lot of paperwork. And again, for context, I'm not talking about like a Bombay or a Delhi, right? I'm talking about majority of the country. So that is two. And even otherwise, the market is fairly fragmented in India. So while you have the bigger law firms really sort of putting in the money and the investment to do R&D, bring in technology, make those investments, right? For a large majority of the legal service providers, it is the it's not affordable to make the kind of investment in technology. And that's also contextual because the labor in India in that sense, or I mean, I don't want to undermine anybody, but just the cost of hiring a lawyer a lot of times tends to be very like it, it tends to be cheaper than investing in a technology. And of course, tech tends to be very expensive, especially when you do that conversion, right? Because a lot of tech is sitting out of India. So the second you do the conversion, there's like an additional layer of cost differential. So that's sort of the context. So the legal tech industry is not really like it's evolving, it's changing rapidly, but it's not as mature. So it's not comparable. That's just the
Exactly.
context. But that being said, the bigger ones are the ones that are being used tend to be simpler technologies, right? So you will have things that are mostly used for proofing or formatting, and then, like you said, like legal research, which is like the backbone of all legal work. That, and then on top of that, you have a little bit of like document assembly, document automation tools, a little bit of CRM tools, which are like more specific to legal industry. There are a few CLM tools as well that in-house companies are using, but like I said, right, that market, which is just Indian, like Indian legal tech companies, are still really growing. So that sort of is the lay of the land right now in India.
I see, and that's interesting because you know, one of the justifications for legal tech is that, like, you know, it's just expensive to go to lawyers, but then when the human factor, you know, it's quite abundantly available. I mean, there's a lot of lawyers in India. I mean, there's a lot of lawyers in the US as well, but it's I guess, like, from a cost perspective, it's just cheaper to hire more people than to, you know, integrate this tech. And that is such a big challenge, because how do you sort of get around that? And then there's the question of, like, replacing people. Do you think that, you know, legal tech tools, if they were, say, like, tomorrow, if they just become much cheaper, say, like, you know, there's like more legal tech, more of a legal tech community in India, like, you know, creating this tech, bringing it to India so that there's not as much of a problem with, like, conversion. Do you think it would actually replace job for some of these junior level, like, law jobs that are easier to hire at the moment? Or do you think it would open up newer opportunities for those people who are no longer doing some of that, like, classic LPO type of work?
Okay, so I think it will be like a cycle. There will be movement of people, but I don't think jobs will, like, sort of go away, right? It's not like somebody will become unemployed because new technology has come in. Ideally, whenever new technology comes in, you stop doing low latitude work, right? And there is always more complex work to do at any given level. So you can always sort of, like, so usually these people will move to, like, better things, doing better, more complicated tasks and, like, delivering on them. And then automatically they become more relevant to the organization, right? So that is one. That's one way of how I see, you know, tech really coming in within legal service providers. And the second you get technology, I think you can also take on more work, because that's what people are getting more tech for, right? You usually get in tech where you see immediate ROI. And the immediate ROI is only coming in because you have demand that you can't really fulfill right now, which means nobody's losing a job. They're probably going to be doing, like I said, right, they're going to be delivering more work in lesser time. And I think those are great cycles to be in. And I know a lot of lawyers get very scared about, oh my God, AI is going to replace my job. But it's not going to replace anybody's job. It's just going to allow you to do better work. And it's going to allow you to make better decisions. And I think that's mostly what's going to change. So that's one side of it on the current structure. And the second side is, like I said, right, like, all of these startups are like great hubs for new opportunities, and they get investment and they're rapidly growing. And, like, you can just look at AngelList and look at any Indian legal tech startup, right? They will, like, have 10, at least 10 to 20, like, openings at any given point of time. So if anything, it's adding to the job market. And if you're scared that as a lawyer that you will become irrelevant, the only way to stop that from happening is to need to constantly, like, upskill and learn whatever new is happening on the market, and, you know, really embrace the tech. Because if you say, oh, no, I'm only going to take printouts and I'm going to hand mark up, you may have a little bit of problem maneuvering the change.
Yeah. It might be a little outdated at this point. And then there's also, from a sustainability perspective, like, stop printing things.
Of course, that.
But yeah, no, very, very important points. And I think it's so important to put that into perspective, right? Because it's fair to be a little bit worried that this thing going to replace me, but it doesn't have to. You just sort of have to work with it, learn to work with this, like, new thing. And I think the pandemic has been so pivotal in sort of moving things and along in that direction, because even here in the US, like, lawyers could not imagine doing almost everything with Zoom. You know, you would travel, like, I mean, I knew a professor who used to travel all the way from like Seattle to like Berkeley to like do like work meetings, and then like he would like, but like he was efficient, so he like aligned it in such a way that it would like fall on the day of his class, so he was flying in and out the same day. And imagine the level of expenses and whatnot. Like luckily this professor was like, it was working along with his like class, so it ended up being like worth it and fine. But there are lawyers that just do that sort of like travel every day. Like they'll go from like New York to California and like just take a night flight back. Like you don't need to do things like that anymore. Like you could just like do Zoom, but people just felt like there is not as much of a human touch to Zoom, and we're just reimagining what it even means to have that human touch, or to what it even means to negotiate or just do everyday tasks with more efficiency. And now it's just, like it's very common. Like you don't even I could not even ask someone for a virtual coffee. It was always like, hey, would you like to grab coffee? Now I'm always
Yeah.
asking for virtual coffees, even if we're in the same city, because I can do so many things and then also meet the person and not worry about commuting. So as a last question, Shreya, what are your hopes, dreams, and fears with regard to legal tech in the coming future?
Okay, that's I think a very, very interesting question, and I haven't really thought this through, so I'm going to probably reserve the right to change my answer later on as things progress. But my hope is, and I think that's one thing that like everybody talks about efficiency and profitability, and the entire narrative that it gives you a competitive advantage. My hope with legal tech is that more and more legal service providers and especially the ones that are facing attrition issues and just like human problems in that sense, start embracing these things and really looking at them as retention tools, right? Like if you have people who enjoy the kind of work they're doing and are not like doing low latitude work that tends to be more mundane and like repetitive and redundant, you'll just have happier people who'd want to work with you, right? And you can work at a much faster pace and they will feel a lot of growth. That is one. You also really, really improve just how much value you deliver to your client, right? So you have happier clients. And just like that makes that entire cycle so much more fulfilling. And these are, of course, like the main stakeholders, which is the lawyers and the clients. But apart from that, I think if you can really, really use tech, right? And it's already sort of happening where you will see a lot of this tech is now becoming more accessible. Like it is improving how people can access justice and how they can really access law. Because if you're able to deconstruct it to a machine, then you can really sort of expand who it reaches out to. And I think Rocket Lawyer is like a great example of this, right? Where it just like immediately made so much legal, not really advice, but just legal product in that sense to like such a massive range of people. And even like, what is that one? Hello Divorce is like a brilliant platform, right? Completely made on something so simple and really helps you like, just like sail through a very, very tough time without additional complications and, and of course, like, right, additional expenses and like more meetings and more stress and all of that. So just makes like for a happier community around you and a community that really believes in law and doesn't, like you said, right, initially, where people don't really know their rights and that becomes an issue because it's impossible to, you don't even know what your starting point is. So all of that is becoming more and more accessible. And I think that is my biggest hope from legal tech to just like improve how access to justice space is really expanding and just like improve access to justice overall. So that is one. What are my fears? My fears are not really on the legal tech side of things. Though I know, like, of course, right? Like, as every market, there's going to be a lot of upheaval and you're going to see like a lot of fragmentation and then there will be some consolidations and then the same kind of cycles that usually all markets go through. And I know it has to like live through that entire level of maturity. But my fear is that I just hope in India, it doesn't like get stuck in a cycle. Right? Like whatever that downturn it is needs to like get into an on eventually, and that people survive it and that companies survive it, because I don't have clarity of what's going to come.
No, I mean, I can relate with that fear. I sometimes worry about that here in the US as well. But things are moving along, I think, in like India as well, and US as well. And I think that, you know, legal tech is here to stay. And, you know, all thanks to like people like you that are like spreading more sort of awareness and information. I just truly admire that. I mean, there's like you, there's Olga, there's, you know, Alex Sue, there's, you know, Mary Carroll, there's Ironclad in general. Like, you know, they're just spreading so much information everywhere, making people aware about legal tech, and that is
and
our
there is
like
you and your podcast, right? I mean, you're also doing your bit.
You all are, and I think that's the whole point of, you know, Rethinking Legal Ops, is just to have these conversations and just open them up to public, so that they can participate, chime in, agree, disagree. And this has been wonderful, absolutely wonderful having you, Shreya. I really appreciated all your insights and just love all the energy and enthusiasm that you have for legal tech. And thank you to all our listeners for tuning in every week. Remember, we're here every Thursday with more amazing guests. Next week, we'll have Andy Nin from Elevate. And feel free to tune in. And I'll see you all around. And keep the movement going for the digital transformation of law.
Thanks a lot, Aishwarya.
The practice of law is changing, and we're here for it. Thank you so much for tuning in for today's episode of Rethinking Legal Ops. Follow us for more such insightful conversations about the transformative impact of legal tech. Also, follow Speed Legal and let us know in your comments and messages about how you leverage legal tech solutions to make your work more efficient. See you next time.